Welcome to Lily of the Herbs Talks. Lily created this podcast to share herbal wisdom and plant magic. She seeks to catch the plant people nestled throughout Australia and talk to them about their secrets and knowledge of traditional plant remedies, foraging, medicine making, and plant connection. This podcast episode is a recording from a live online class that I ran on Why We Need a Herbal Revolution, and it is about an hour and a half long, and while you can't see the slides, it's a really wonderful insight and could be nice to listen to in a long drive, really highlighting the future of herbalism and how it can be an empowering way of life, and it can be your form of activism or rebellion so that you can be the change that you want to see in the world. We start with a meditation and then flow into different aspects of herbalism, including the three pillars of herbalism, books and resources that have inspired me, the legalities of whether you need certification or not to practice as a herbalist in Australia, and future training options. So enjoy and send me a message if you have any questions.
Chair or the floor, wherever you are, and taking a moment to drop down the eyes, taking a breath, small, deep, wherever the breath comes. And taking a moment to acknowledge the traditional owners of the land. Tonight I speak to you from Boonwurrung country, and I pay my respects to the elders past, present, and emerging, especially in this time of voices and treaties and truth. And I hope that however that comes through, that their voice is able to be recognized and heard as sovereign beings of this land who have practiced and made medicine for thousands and thousands of years. And we seek to learn from them and listen. Tonight's class came to me, kind of from a very spontaneous place. It was, it really just birthed through me. I did record a couple of podcasts for any of you who listen to my podcast, a couple of podcasts a few years ago in the midst of COVID, when COVID was kind of just booming in 2020. And it really birthed through me that we need a herbal revolution. And there was no talk at that time in the media about traditional ways of maybe working with viruses and fighting viruses, and those that tried to have a voice around that were often silenced. And I know this is a huge contentious topic, so I won't go there, but that's what really birthed that for me. And I had a couple of discussions, so in the class notes I'll actually send you some links to those podcasts. And something else that came through was just more of a desire to speak to why I believe it is very important for us to practice herbalism, to talk to herbalism, to learn herbalism, to spread herbalism, and to reawaken that, even though it is really reawakening, there's a big draw towards it, to understand where we've come from, the history of herbalism, and where its place is today, and how you if you're interested in stepping more into it and it feels like a calling, but you're not sure how you can take that step. I'm great that Monique listened to the podcast. And yeah, if you do have any questions or want to pop anything into the chat, please go for it. And if you want to turn your mic on and ask me a question, I'm really open to that participation, but I don't force it on anyone because I know it can be intimidating speaking to people that you've never met before. So I've made a little slideshow, and I'm going to use that to guide me through tonight's class. So we'll work through that, and I'll just share that now. Wonderful. All right. It's nice to see some familiar names in the chat there. So why we need a herbal revolution, and many of you may have your own ideas to that. You're welcome to put that in the chat, but I think that in essence, we're at a catalyst now in our world where so many of us are experiencing chronic health conditions, depression, anxiety, all of these symptoms, which are not necessarily fault of our own, but a byproduct of a system which is not inherently evil, but is straining under the weight of the explosion of the human population, and it is limited. You know, when we're in one system, it doesn't, one size doesn't fit all. And, you know, I won't go into a patriarchy or capitalism, but that, you know, they are some of the foundations of that structure. And many female-bodied or other people that don't fit into those, to into that framework, Indigenous peoples, they're suffering, and our bodies are suffering because our bodies are nature, and our plants and our bodies are not separated. And healing, you know, it can be done on an individual level, but it also, it needs to be done on a systemic level. And I believe that the practice of herbalism, the practice of harvesting plants with the seasons, with the cycles of the moon, with the sun, this is a radical act of reclaiming our essence, our natural essence, and reclaiming our health. And I believe that it should be shared, and it should be accessible and freely accepted, because it's not necessarily accepted in today's mainstream biomedical system. And often, you know, it's sidelined and not seen as a worthwhile or effective medicine. There is a oxymoron that exists, and it is, on the one hand, I sort of hear like, oh, and I've heard from, I've had debates with GPs and doctors, you know, this like, oh, you've got to be careful, plants are dangerous, how can we know, really measure and quantify the different constituents within them, you shouldn't use them, they're not, they haven't been properly tested. I hear that on the one hand, and there is elements of truth in that, plants are very potent. But then on the other hand, I hear that, you know, herbs don't really work, they don't, they're not effective. And it's like, how can these two exist? And I think that they are their storylines and narratives that are holding us back from really understanding and embracing this ancient practice, which is, you know, has existed since humans existed on the earth with plants. So let's move in from here. So the first point that I want to talk to, and I guess I've already mentioned that, is that herbalism is, in its essence, is empowerment. There is something so magical about knowing that you can heal yourself and that medicine is free. We have a really wonderful healthcare system in Australia. We are able to go to an emergency room when we have had an accident, or someone is having a heart attack, or there is something really serious going on, or we can go and do bulk billing on Medicare, you know, if we want a blood test. And that's incredible. We're really supported here. Somewhere like America, they have, you know, people are afraid to go to the doctor because it could, they could end up with thousands of dollars on their on the bill. So, you know, in that sense, you know, we do have free medicine, but, you know, there is a price to pharmaceutical medicines. You know, sometimes, you know, we are, if you are having, and there is a dependence, and I think that this system sometimes locks people into taking one drug which has side effects, so there needs to be another, so there needs to be another, and there needs to be another, and we do have to pay for that. And these companies, ultimately these bigger structures, you know, they benefit from that, from, you know, millions and billions of dollars being funded into these pills and products. And so in that essence, it's, they're not, it's not free. And medicine that is harvested is free. And but it's, you know, and if, when I say that, I'll go into it even more, you know, in an essence, nothing is free. You know, a plant gives itself willingly sometimes. So there is a conversation that needs to be had between the plant, but, you know, the practice of herbalism, when done right, is a reciprocal relationship, and there's a conversation, and there's, when asking or taking from a plant, often, you know, there's a giving back, or there's a relationship that is formed. And, you know, that itself is free. You know, we can have that relationship. So having that relationship is so empowering, knowing that you on a daily basis are well, and if you slightly go in or out, or sometimes are tackling a illness or something that pops up, you know, that you have the tools right there wherever you want, out in the garden, and the plant that's, you know, needed and is perfect for you is right outside. So that knowledge and the traditional knowledge that was, has been lost. You know, I come from a lineage, a lineage from Scandinavia and Europe and England and Scotland, and there was hedgerow herbalism there, and then there was Celtic herbalism, and that goes, that lineage is, runs very strong in my blood. And you know, we've lost a lot of that. You know, sometimes many of us may have had grandmothers that had remedies or put poultices or onions on our chest or in our garlic in our socks when we were sick. But you know, many of us didn't have that, and you know, those practices are sort of somewhat forgotten or thought of as simple these days. And yet some of these simple remedies are really, really potent and can keep us in a relatively wonderful well-being, state of well-being. And I think that if we lose all of these, you know, this knowledge, and we are losing, we're losing plants, we're losing traditional knowledge, we're losing language, we lose that ability. And how did these people learn that knowledge? You know, it was passed down verbally, and it was also cultivated from listening and talking to plants, and we've also lost that knowledge. So the practice of herbalism allows us to connect to the animate world. I've just kind of skipped down to point four here, if you're kind of wondering, is she following the points? So that connection to the alive, the animate world, the plants around us, that knowledge, it awakens us. And I see a lot of disconnection. You know, it's incredible that we can be here tonight chatting and talking online with each other, but and in that sense, that is connection. But there is a disconnect between us and, I guess, reality. There's, you know, we're kind of stimulated constantly, and I do think that it is a problem, because when we're on screens and, you know, getting those hits, we're losing sensation. And I'll go into that in a later slide, but sensation is one of the key tools to connecting and understanding. Plants don't speak in words or you know, sentences, or they don't write books, but they speak to us in sensations, and so do our bodies. And so when we spend a lot of our time up here and with the eyes, we're deadening the other sensations. So herbalism reminds us that we are bodies, and our bodies have needs, and our bodies speak to us in sensation, and the plants speak to us reciprocally in that sensation. We might do a little meditation on that at the end. And one last, back to point three, mainstream medicine misses the individual. I think, as I spoke to just in that first slide there, the individual is all of herbalism. You know, we look at that person in that point in time on that day with whatever symptoms are manifesting, the constitution that they were born with, and then where they are out of balance in that moment, depending on the season and what they ate for breakfast. And that is how we work with it. And I think that mainstream medicine, it's misses that nuance and that ability to work with the whole. And it can be sometimes just surface level, just like going and just treating the symptom. So that's the first slide rant. And I've got some beautiful St. John's wort, a picture of St. John's wort here, because I think that St. John's wort is a kind of like epitomizes and is a symbol for empowerment. St. John's wort flowers on the summer solstice, and it is, you know, the longest days of the year when we have the most contact with the sun. It's ruled by the planet Leo, fire. And it brings joy. You know, when we've lost the spark in our life and the flame is going out in the heart, and it's been a long winter, and we're starting to question and wonder, like, what is the point? You know, St. John's wort comes in, and it reminds us that, you know, all is not lost, and the sun is here, and there is so much potential, and we can feel love and happiness and joy again. And I think that is herbalism for me. It is empowerment and is joy, and it is strong, and it, you know, it's the flame. It's keeping the flame alive. So thank you to St. John's wort, and I do love to wildcraft it in the summer months around the kind of southern east facing, you know, the east, the sort of southern southeast of Australia. So each slide I'm going to bring in a herbal friend. To help guide us through. Next, let's move on. There we go. Great. Health sovereignty. Okay. So, health sovereignty. What does health sovereignty mean? I guess sovereign being is a being that is they make their own rules. And we are all guided by the society under which we live, and we abide by those rules. But within that, we have a certain level of freedom and choices that we can make. And I think that something I have witnessed is that I think we are losing our health sovereignty. There's this desire to go to a professional and be told what's wrong with us. And we rely on testing, and we rely on a professional to tell us what's wrong with us and if they can fix it. And that's kind of, we're giving our power away in that sense. And as a herbalist, the first, we start with ourself, and it's about learning, relearning to feel trust within the body and to trust, to have trust in the plants around us. And when you've got that sense of trust, and that your body is always working every day to maintain homeostasis, to keep you breathing, it's constantly minutely fiddling with your temperature and adjusting and moving and changing, and responding to your external and internal environment, fighting off viruses and keeping bacteria and funguses in check every moment. And I think we miss a lot of that. We go around and we don't feel those minute sensations happening. And so I think being a herbalist is again, it's about listening to your client, your friends, your family, the plants around you, and your own body. And when you start to do that, and you start to learn more about the patterns and the elements and the energetics and the thermal qualities of yourself, then you can start to make your own decisions around your health. And you can choose when to interact with the medical system. And again, I'm not advocating for throwing down and overthrowing of the current system. I think that a more organic way, a more nature-based way is needed. How we see trees, and the roots break up the concrete. You see the concrete cracking over time, and it's just gently making its way in there. And then you see the little dandelion popping up in the cracks, or just in the gutter up on the top. So it's there is this way of slowly finding its way, finding our way back in there. And I think that that's the way that this is spreading. The word of herbalism is spreading again, and with that, we can feel empowered, and we can have a choice. We can say, okay, so I might want to go to the doctor for a blood test, and then I'm going to they can give me their opinion of how I might work with this, and then I'm going to work with my plant allies, and then maybe take one of the options that they're giving me, but knowing that I don't have to, or having I guess sovereignty around that decision. And so there's choice there. And health sovereignty is, it's again, it's not about being on our own, because we're none of us are on our own. We're in a completely interconnected system. And so we can have our own, we can be sovereign and make our own choices, but remember that we are completely connected. And that in itself is a feeling of power. So we are so intrinsically connected to our environment, the plants around us. We breathe out carbon dioxide, the plants breathe it in, and then they breathe out oxygen, which we're breathing in. We're in this relationship, and there's been so many different cool studies and experiments where people have played music, or treated one plant, come in and treated one plant with, in a way that was rough or cruel, breaking branches or something like that, and then treating the other plant with love, and that those plants would talk to each other and would try to help one another, and could also feel fear, and could also feel sadness. And I think that that is a really potent reminder that plants are not these, I guess they are alive. They have their own intelligence. And so we have to learn to reconnect and to speak to their own spirits and their own devas and their own essence, to remember that we are not just walking around ripping off plants and just doing whatever. Like we've got to reform that connectedness to get us through some potentially difficult times in the future with our climate and with, food, and potentially even sometimes maybe there might be medicine shortages. And so if we have that relationship already formed, we're in such a sovereign and strong position. Do you have any questions? I'm going to get to the last point. If you have any thoughts or anything, I really welcome you to put it into the chat. But if not, it's all good as well. So finally, learning to recognize greenwashing and false marketing. This is a little bit of a, maybe you're thinking, why did she put this in here? So I guess what do I mean by greenwashing? I just noticed trends in time. I remember, stevia, for instance, a beautiful plant, very sweet, naturally sweet plant, which came suddenly onto the market as being a really great alternative to sugar. And that was, maybe 10 years ago. And then about 5 or 6 years later, I saw Coca-Cola had an advertisement for their new Coke sweetened by stevia. And I just thought that was absolutely hilarious. Like, and just even muesli bars full of artificial preservatives. And I think it's really important to remember that as a herbalist, for me, the practice of herbalism is actually around really connecting to actual plants and to being connected to seasons and to harvesting your medicine. Because herbalism is a huge industry now. There are huge farms where herbs are being mass produced and then bottled and then capsulated and then put into different formulations and blends. And that's great. That is great, but it's not always, going to be as potent as something that you've grown and made yourself, or you've known the herbalist who's done it on a really small scale. And I think that this is where herbalism is sometimes being misconstrued, and people are saying, oh, I tried that, it doesn't really work, it's not effective. Because there is a certain level of quality and potency that can only really be achieved by when it's made in a really, really small scale, very intentional. And I think that herbs only work when they are really, really intentionally made and harvested. And, once I worked at a store, you might know it, called Govita. And it's kind of like a chain store. There's lots of herbs in there. It was a really interesting experience. But the amount of supplements and newfangled ideas and kind of like the newest health trend that kind of comes onto the market and then just gets sold without really an understanding of it, I think is a lot of the time there is big business in it too. So yes, go out and buy and try different herbal formulations and blends, of course, but I think remember the importance of the base practice, that real health sovereignty comes from knowing that you can actually probably make just as potent and effective medicine yourself than anything that you can buy. And I think we've really forgotten that, and we give our power away and think that health often maybe means going to a naturopath and spending $300 on different herbs and supplements. And I don't think that it does. So herbalism can be really simple, and it can be really effective and affordable, and with a really reciprocal relationship with the earth. Yeah. So this is one of my favorite little parts of this. Can you read that? Is there anyone wants to put a thumbs up in the chat? Oops, it went backwards. There we go. I can see the chat symbol up the top. No, okay, that's good. Great. All good. Thanks, Kelly. So, connection to land and nature. This is one of the biggest gifts, and I think many of you will know and probably already have experienced that, the joy and the sense of meaning and belonging and pleasure that comes from planting a seed yourself and watching it grow and then lovingly harvesting it and making it into medicine and watching the seasons change and your favorite blossom come on in spring, or knowing that the sun is slowly the days are getting shorter and it's time to harvest the roots. These are, they're exciting times. They give us something to look forward to, and they give meaning to our days, and they give us a sense of being in relation to the land and place. And I think that many of us feel displaced. Many of us are from different lineages and have migrated, especially into Australia. We're all settlers, recent, very recent settlers. And there can be a sense of, do I belong here? And I think that finding a relationship with plants that have also traveled from other lands and have naturalized here is a way of finding a sense of meaning here and connecting to the plants that were here before and understanding their ways. And I love to have this diagram here with the circle of this circle. And I'm just going to start to copy in some, I'm going to write on here. I'm going to annotate. So let's have a little write. So let's start here on the left, and we have, so up here, this is, and I have a little cleavers plant here, Galium aparium, which comes and really starts to spread out, and it's an annual. It only pops up when there's enough water in the air, and it's moist enough and it's cool enough, and it's called cleavers. And this is sort of the spring energy, and spring is the time to harvest aerial parts of the plant. So this is generally in herbalism, this is the best time to get your leafy greens. And you've got your nettles, and then you'll have things like chickweed and those greens that really help us to cleanse after the stagnation, or eating heavier, richer foods and not moving as much through winter. Spring comes in, there's this green growth, and these are often blood cleansing herbs. And so working with the seasons can be really, really wonderful. Sorry, cleansing. There we go. You can all see my typing. And what else is related to this time of the year? I often relate this time of the year to the air element, because there is a lot of movement in spring. There's a lightness that comes in, and you can also relate this air, this spring, to a moon that is waxing. It's getting bigger, so it's like a half moon. So put that in there as well. Is there anything else that you might relate to spring, and the leafy greens and harvesting the aerial parts of the plant? You can pop it in the chat if there's anything else you relate to this part of the world, part of the cycle. What was I putting there? Waxing. And these, just understanding these connections, is a really wonderful way of knowing when to harvest plants. Beautiful. No one? All right. So I'll change the color and let's do something bright. So now moving up to the north, I guess you would say. And I like to liken this to a time of, say, the full moon. Or even full sun, full moon in the moon cycles, and even midday. And here at the top, this is the time that I also relate to spring, to summer. Sorry, it's to summer. And it's when we harvest the flowers. So at this time there, we come to the summer solstice, and when we have the longest days and the most contact with the sun, and it is the hottest. And so this is when the flowers really come out. And in herbalism, it's generally when we start harvesting flowers like calendula, chamomile, elder, St. John's wort, so many. And this is this time. And I relate that it's all connected. And this is the time of also the fire element. Fire element. Great. And you can really think of that in terms of the day as well, because I've put the midday in there. This is the time to also harvest flowers within a day, because you want to harvest flowers not first thing in the morning, because they'll have dew on the leaves, on the petals, and that can contribute to mold. Like they may not dry as well. So you want to wait until the dew has dried off and the sun has come out, not in the afternoon sun, which can be too hot and a lot of flowers will wilt, but just at that point, that's when you harvest the flowers. And also in summer as well, just it's kind of like that early part of summer where the sun is there, not those autumn hot March days that we get in Victoria. Right, and then after summer, as you can imagine, what are we moving towards? So I might put actually red here. Or maybe we'll go dark blue. So then we're moving down around to the autumn. And this is where we get the we really get the culmination and the fruits of our labors. So the flower, which has bloomed, will lose its petals and then will turn to seed. And this is where we can harvest things like rose hips. I've got rose hips here, rose hips, hawthorn berries. Any other ideas there? Lots of fruits coming through here. And you can really harvest berries at any time of the day. But I will liken this to a waning moon and to the element of water, the water element. And there's a letting go here with the water element, a flowing away. And there's many different, I will talk to, there's many, many people work with the wheel, the medicine wheel, in terms of their herbalism, and some people will do it slightly different. So you may have come into contact with this concept that I'm sharing here and have it seem slightly different or a different element related to here and maybe north, east, south, and west. But what I'm trying to kind of articulate with you is that there is this inextricable connection that is flowing in between the elements, the seasons, the time of day, the moon cycles, the plants, and when we harvest them. And that is what herbalism is about. It's about remembering that this cycle, this life cycle, is something that is constantly flowing through and that we cannot separate ourselves from. And then when we start to become aware of it and work with it, with our medicine, with our gardens, with our harvesting, we become healthy, we become a part of it all. And I think that for me is the purpose of being human, is to be relating, to be in the cycle. We're in it whether we're aware of it or not, just to be a part of that is to have meaning. So now moving down, you can't really see that rose hip. Can't really read that, but anyway, we're going down, and I might write in brown. So now we're coming down to the earth element. Cheryl likened to winter. So winter is, and the earth element is in its essence, it's cold, it's still, and it's a time of hibernation and going inward. And it's when we in herbalism, we harvest the roots. Harvest roots, like our dandelion, chickweed, sorry, not chickweed, dandelion, chicory, yellow dock, licorice, burdock, these beautiful roots. This is when we harvest them. And it is a time for nourishing. In Chinese medicine, they relate the earth element to stomach and the spleen. So thinking of digestion and these roots, they can be really potent in helping and bitter and moving and cleansing our digestive tract. And it's also, I liken it to the dark moon. And you can harvest roots at different times, but Rudolf Steiner, who's the founder of biodynamics, he likes to describe, a waning moon or dark moon as to be the energy is down in the roots. And then when it's a waxing full moon, energy is in the flowers and the leaves. It's in the upper parts of the plant. So it's good to think about that, even if you're not harvesting it within the seasons or necessarily within the sun at the sun time, you can always think of the moon and think about when am I, where is the moon right now and where will the energy be? And also, if you are working with the seasons, this is where the plant will be sending most of its medicinal properties and actions and warmth, the energy. So in late autumn and winter, the plant is sending its energy down into the roots. And so that's where the most medicinally active constituents will be. And in spring, the energy is in new growth, new leaves, new green, and that's where the medicine is. And then when it goes into the flowers, that's where the medicine is. And when it's going into fruit, the energy is going into fruit. That's where the energy is. So you'll notice that plants, medicinal plants that fruit, you'll notice that their leaves are going slightly yellow in that time, or maybe even falling off. So I wouldn't recommend harvesting medicine from those leaves at that time. So I guess this connection to land and nature is a practice of really becoming in, really coming into contact and observing. So practice seeing and seeing in a new light. And this is the practice of the herbal revolution, is seeing again, is really, really seeing what is around us. You're a little bit of a quiet group, which is completely fine. So I'm guessing that there's no questions, but I'm going to keep going. And here we go. Just delete all of that, clear my drawings. So we're going to move on. I quite like this little circle that I've created. All right. So just moving to the next page, if it will let me. Great. So getting started, how many of you are already practicing? thanks, Kelly. How many of you are already practicing herbalists right now? How many of you are already got a bit of some herbs in your garden? And if you are just beginning as well, you can welcome to just put into the chat if you're just beginning. So I want to sort of know who I'm talking to right now. Dabbling as a beginner. Thanks, Natalia. Yeah. Yeah. Great. And I think beginning, getting stronger each day. So Kelly's already practicing. Awesome to have you here, Kelly. Growing and using herbs for a few years now. Beautiful. Okay. You're very new to it. Using a plant app to identify plants as I see them. Found some chickweed yesterday. Yay. Great, Sarah. Love that. And Kerry, beginning, growing and trying simple uses. Beautiful. Okay. This is lovely. So you're already really, you're really connected already to plants and working with them. And there is no, I guess, in a way, there's, who's to say there's no expert, the path is endless. The path is each day we deepen and widen and, our roots go down even longer and our limbs get wider and stretch out even more. But, this process it's endless. So wherever you are is perfect. But I think for anyone who is starting and for spreading the knowledge, if you're already practicing and wanting to share that with others, is that I always recommend to really listen to the plants that are coming to you. So I often find, sometimes people love to ask me, like, what's your favorite herb? And I can never answer, it just feels wrong. But it changes, I go through seasons of really loving something in particular. But something that I find is very personal to me is that I'm often chosen by plants, and the way that they choose me is through my dreams. So I don't know if anyone else, if you're chosen by dreams, let me know. But for instance, I'll be running through a forest and then I'll be looking desperately, I'll be like, rose hip, rose hip, rose hip, and I'm looking for rose hip. And then it will come to me, a few days later, I'll be working with a client or something and trying to come up with a mix or thinking of someone or in conversation. And that dream, like, I'll have forgotten it, and then it will come through very strongly and I'll remember the dream and I'll be like, ah, yes. And I think that for me is one of the ways that I get chosen by plants. But I think start to listen to ways that you might be chosen as well. I think I had a experience where I was wanting to help my father, who had a very bad gut infection, and I was quite worried about him, and I was doing research, and I fell asleep and dreamt of golden seal, which is not a plant that I work with very often. Anyway, the next day I'd completely forgotten about it, and I called a dear herbalist friend, and I was just asking her about it, and she said golden seal. And it was just perfect. Like, it's you already know, I think, and you may have experiences of this, that you already know sometimes. And I got in golden seal immediately, and it just cleared it up wonderfully. And I think that these moments are the catalysts, and they're there for you. I have worked with someone once, and she would say that she was getting visions of plants, and plants were coming to her that she'd never even heard of and worked with, and she didn't know why. And it may not be so strong for you. It might be really simple. It might be just walking along the street and identifying a plant, like, what's that, with your plant app, and being like, it's chickweed. And then going, oh, okay. And then doing a little bit of research about chickweed and going, oh, chickweed. Gosh, this is so perfect. I can make a balm with this because I've got this going on. And I really encourage you to trust those instincts, to trust those little clues that you have, and really go with them. In the chat from Kelly, I'd love to read out. They come to me when I step out of the busyness every damn time. It's actually a beautiful reminder when it happens that I've dropped the veil a little and to step in deeper. Also, when I'm sad and things aren't making sense, the plants come and soothe as they do so well. Thank you, Kelly. It's beautiful. Yeah, this I love to hear how they come to you, and these beautiful stories of coming in the perfect moment. And I've also felt that experience of walking along and then seeing a plant that you remember and learn, and feeling that beautiful, beautiful love. And Sarah says, yes, have discovered a lot of neck pain and discovered chickweed can help with inflammation. Perfect, Kenny, Kelly, Sarah, Kenny. Amazing. So you really are chosen. And it makes life, again, coming back to life is animate. And this is why herbalism is incredible, because it is magic. The veil becomes thinner, and depending on where you're at in your menstrual cycle or any of these things, the veil can become even thinner. And it's those moments that life is like you're lit up and you remember. And I think that that's something I feel a lot of grief around, is not having, knowing that other cultures, they speak to their plants, they have relationships with their plants, they're never alone with their plants. And that sometimes I forget that. And then when I have one of these moments, I just remember how everything is interconnected and perfect as it is. So that is, I guess, one of the places to get started and to learn from the plants. They really are our teachers, and we learn by listening to signs. It might even just be reading about a plant and then realizing, for some reason, I always open my herb books just on a random page and then read that page, and then suddenly that plant is everywhere and is needed for everything that I'm working with at the time. So I think that they teach us, and they're really waiting, and sometimes they're wanting to be worked with a wonderful woman, Jackie Bushell. And she's an incredible herbalist who's been practicing in Australia for 30 years, and she works specifically with flower essences. And she told me an incredible story in one of my classes the other day, about a student. And they were in a long-term container, and they were making flower essences. And this student had, they all had to go out and choose a flower. And this student said, oh, I'm like, now I make mine next year because I have my favorite cactus plant and it only flowers once a year, and it already flowered a month ago. I'm going to have to do my assignment next year, because I'm waiting for it to flower. And she said, oh, okay, yeah, all right, you can do it next year with that cactus flower. Anyway, the woman went away for the weekend. And then when she came back, the cactus had suddenly flowered with 20 flowers, not just one, but 20, which is she'd never seen in her entire life. And she called Jackie, and she was like, Jackie, the flat, the tree, the cactus is flowered, and there's 20. Do you think I should make an essence with it? Jackie was like, yes, don't make an essence. The cactus will probably fall over and kill you or something. It clearly wants you to make an essence with it. And I love that story, because I think that They do. They really, really want to be worked with sometimes. And I love to talk about the gardens from Scotland. There's an intentional community there, Finhorn, and they wrote a book in the 70s. It's called The Gardens of Finhorn. And in they were talking to their veggie patch, their devas, plant devas. They spent a lot of time in meditation, and they'd go into the garden and they'd say, "Hey, beetroots, do you want to be watered today?" And the beetroots would be like, "No, maybe have do the lettuce, but we want some fertilizer tomorrow," you know. And they were in this real communion and talking about what they should plant next. And maybe we won't ever I won't get to that specific level myself one day, but I think it's a beautiful reminder that they're there to interact and talk to us. And the third thing around getting started, I think, and I talked to it at the start, was reawakening the senses. So in herbalism, we call the senses our organoleptic senses, and what we see, taste, smell, and can touch, and even what we feel, this is the organoleptic senses, and they are our number one tools as a herbalist. So, in scientists have laboratories. Kelly read the book. Great. Yes, it's an incredible book. I'll put it into the class notes if I remember. And so back to the senses. So we really, the senses, reawakening the senses, these organoleptic senses. We don't have a microscope. I don't have, we do can have a microscope. Actually, there is a microscope where I live, but we don't always know like this constituent and that constituent, and I'm going to isolate this compound and only take out this specific one and use it here. It's like the whole plant. And we can learn by developing our senses to understand how a plant wants to be worked with and how it interacts within the body. The taste is an incredible one. Each taste is a clue. We have astringency, bitterness, sweet, sour, pungent, spicy, and all of these tastes are a clue to the action, the way that the plant works within the body. For instance, astringency is drying. It's a very drying quality, and it draws in. It's like a unripe apple. You bite into it, and you're like, your mouth puckers up. Many plants have astringency in them, and that's the presence of tannins. You might know of people tanning hides, animal hides, with tannins because they were using plants with a very high astringency to preserve the flesh so it wouldn't go off. And very high tannic plants, for instance, like black tea, and there's a lot of tannins in that. They're very drying, and they can help to tone tissue. An example of one is red raspberry leaf that women often take after hemorrhaging or with heavy bleeding because it's very astringent and it helps to tone and tonify the uterus, sometimes reducing blood flow. And astringent herbs like yarrow, another one, is often used because it can be put topically onto a wound and knit tissue together. So that just knowing when you taste it, oh, it's astringent. That's a clue to how it might work within the body, and it's drying. So, someone with diarrhea, you might be working with a drying, astringent plant, whereas something spicy, the taste, spice, thinking about spice, then you might be working, thinking, oh, it's hot, I'm sweating, I've eaten a lot of chili, the energy's going out all throughout, my pores are dilated, I'm sweating more. This is good for raising temperature when I'm coming down with something, for helping to sweat out a virus. There's just so many clues within that. And then looking at the plants is another way of reopening our eyes. There's some of you may have heard of the doctrine of signatures, and that is using kind of metaphor and analogy and seeing the way that a plant grows, like walnut, for instance, when you cut it in half, looks like a brain, and then that can have a really wonderful affinity with our brain. And that ginkgo as well kind of has a brain, the leaf of a ginkgo looks like a brain. And that is a really wonderful cognition and memory herb, and has a lot of can do a lot of work with the blood as well. So I guess these senses, the more that we spend developing them, the time we spend developing them, the more subtle and aware they become. We can recognize hundreds of brands, Nike, Adidas. We know, you can see it in your mind right now, but we've kind of like lost that ability to identify and connect and understand and work with plants, but it's not completely gone because all it takes is practice. So generally in all my workshops, I do a plant meditation, which I for some reason haven't done today with you. But what I like to do is get a plant. You can do this in your own time. It's nice to do it in nature. It's nice to do it when you've got the space for it and to drop in. You may just be sitting next to it and to close the eyes and get into a state of meditation, whatever that looks like for you, but just feeling at peace and feeling comfortable and noticing your breath. And then from there to start to touch the plant, to feel it, your fingertips, and to really just observe, get out of the mind, not being like, I know this is a sage and sage is really good for cough, or just going into that and this is its botanical name and all of that's really important, but practicing getting out of that and into the body and touching the sage and being like, oh, it feels dry, hairy here, and the stem feels a little bit square. And just touching, how does it feel on my skin? Is it soothing? Is it drying? Is it irritating? And then smelling it and noticing the aromas. Is there an aroma? Is it quite strong? Is it overpowering? Does it smell acrid? Is there no aroma at all? And not judging it, just noting, and then again tasting. And then opening your eyes and observing and just doing that with plants on a regular basis will help you to develop your tools, your organoleptic senses. And it's also very important to stay curious. I think as a herbalist, that's what I love about it, is there's always more to learn. I'm always getting really curious about plants. And I'm always reminding myself, like, actually taste that. Actually get down there and learn as a beginner. Always come back to the beginner and keep it simple. So how are we going for time? Doing quite well. So that's just here at the bottom, we actually have cleavers, which I had as the spring aerial plant. And I love Galium aparium, and it sticks to your jumper. Some people might know it as sticky weed. But as you can see, it kind of looks a little bit like the lymph nodes that flow throughout the body, and then we have them conglomerating kind of like under the armpits and in the groin and around the throat. And that is exactly almost like what cleavers looks like. And it's an incredible blood cleanser. So it helps the lymphatic system to move and filter, and that filters the blood. So it's a lymph brush. Yeah, it's a total, and it's a lymph brush. Are you talking about topically, Kelly, like getting the and actually rubbing it on the skin? Is that what you're referring to? Because it can definitely be used like that, although some people find it a bit irritating. But internally, it's definitely a lymph brush. I just want to check, was that internally or externally when you say lymph
Sorry, the
brush?
buttons on my phones don't work very well. It's so antiquated. No, more like putting it in like a spring vinegar or something like that, or even a tincture form if you wanted to go that far.
Yeah, beautiful. Thanks, Kelly. So yes,
No
it's
worries.
it is a lymph brush. That when you said that, I thought about it because it's actually got quite rough hairs on it, and I thought,
Yeah, it's
that actually.
absolutely a vibe. I reckon if we dried it out and did like a little back scratcher or something like that, that could definitely happen.
Definitely could be awesome. So maybe we've just come up with a whole new herbal repertoire for cleavers. But again, yeah, I love that example of it being looking exactly like the lymph. Ah, the cleavers. Great. So getting started. And yeah, there's just nowhere, never feel like it's too late to start, and never feel like, and I think when inspiration dies out, it'll always come again, whether it's in dreams or visions or an illness. I think illness is a real catalyst for starting as well. And I always think that it's not our fault that we got sick, but it's our responsibility to learn and be curious and to take it as a journey. I was recently in Thailand, and I think I went over to Thailand with a fear of getting dengue fever, and then, yes, got dengue fever. And even though I was kind of trying not to get it and was really paranoid about getting it, I guess I brought it on. And I think that there was maybe a part of myself that might have wanted to get dengue fever as a experiment into learning about the stages of a fever and a virus and how the body moves through it. And it's always, yeah, it's such and just that and having that ability to really surrender and trust that my body could go through this experience, even though there was a period of time where I went to get a blood test and they said I needed to go to hospital immediately. And I just, you know, that I think I doubted myself that. I went home and then got all these emails from them being like, go to hospital, go to hospital. And I was sort of like, oh, maybe I will die. And up until that point, I'd felt so firm in the just in my body's ability to journey through it. And so just, yeah, I think that, you know, and then I was, you know, learning about papaya leaf and working with coconut and andrographis. And I actually, you know, thinking back, I'm just so grateful for the experience. So if you can somehow find pleasure in pain and learn, take it as a teacher, I think that will serve you well as a herbalist and know that every time you do get sick or a family member gets sick, it's just this wonderful opportunity to go deeper and learn. That was a side note. Sorry, it was a wrap. So let's go keep going on this topic of why we need a herbal revolution. And according to the World Health Organization, 80% of the world's medicine is still currently today herbal medicine. And it's only in our more developed countries, I guess, that, you know, blessing and a curse, that we've kind of lost that connection. And it is a shame that while we do have such great access to healthcare, and especially for when we really need it and working with complex diseases and things like that, but it's a shame that it's not recognized as a still a really, really worthy form of medicine. And I think that I feel, you know, sometimes that there is stigma around sort of saying that and saying, you know, sometimes as a herbalist, you know, and I'm posting online or something, you know, I still sense this sense of distrust, you know, like, oh, that's pretty, you're working with flowers, how lovely. But there's still not this deep sense of like, yes, and it's really potent and powerful tool for healing. So this is something if you do feel to go really down that path of becoming a practicing herbalist or taking it on or calling yourself a herbalist, that this, you know, it is completely legitimate. And it is a way of, yeah, connecting to your lineage and your history, and it's your birthright. So we need to destigmatize it. And I think that there's, you know, I think that there may be some shadows and some you know, ancestral and inherited fear of coming out as a herbalist and of being really loud and proud about it, because of that current skepticism. We do have a history of burnings and of people being locked up and pushed away when it didn't fit into the mainstream side of medicine at the time. And so I guess it's also it's not in the pharmaceutical company's best interests for people to be empowered and making their own medicine. It won't benefit them financially if we're detaching from that system and making it ourselves. So I don't think it's, yeah, it's not in their interests to make it widely known and accessible. And I feel like that for me is my, that's why herbalism is my main practice of, I guess, anti-capitalism. And I think the more I'm teaching and spreading that knowledge is just feels to be something that should be generally free and should be just generally talked about. And a lot of people that I work with and I'm friends with and I associate with use herbs kind of on the daily and go to and resort to practices, and they'll be sharing them with me like, oh, I usually use this or I do that. And then they'll say, but I'm not a herbalist. And I just wonder why. Why in this society, again, we really put a real importance onto the career and to one title, and there's, you know, giving it to professionalism. So it's like, have you got a degree? What are your qualifications? Ah, okay, you're a herbalist. But actually, we in other cultures, everyone is a herbalist. When I was in Thailand, I'm talking like, oh, where's the local herbalist? And it's like, what herbalist? We don't have a herbalist. We just drink lemongrass tea when we're sick. And so you know, everyone is a herbalist. And I think we need to just reclaim that title, because the more people that reclaim it, the more people, you know, the more widely accessible and acceptable it is. And it doesn't need to be limited to someone who has a degree, which is my next slide. No, it's not. All right. Shall I go to that? Yeah, so I'll come back to the other slide. So finding a mentor versus the education system. So in Australia currently, the laws are a little bit similar but slightly different to in America. But legally, anyone can call themselves a herbalist or a naturopath in Australia and doesn't have to be and is not registered with the Australian Association of Registration of Alternative Health. I'm actually not sure what APRA stands for. And so if anyone knows, please put it in the chat right now. But basically, APRA is a governing body, a government body, which regulates practitioners. So acupuncturists, chiropractors, nutritionists, dietitians, they are all regulated by APRA, and they have to, you know, have a degree, and yeah, they're government regulated, which in essence is a good thing. Whereas herbalists and naturopaths aren't recognized by APRA. And this is something a lot of herbalists and naturopaths are really sad about, because they, you know, they can't get Medicare rebates or concession rates from the government. So they're not really recognized as a legitimate form of practice. And they're also worried that anyone will start calling themselves a herbalist and naturopath without proper training and then put them out of business. So there's a lot of like controversy within the body of herbalists and naturopaths in Australia. But in another frame of mind, you know, there's a lot of other people that see the other side of the coin, and I'm kind of on both sides, but I do think that this is wonderful, mainly because I think that the current education system and degree in Western herbal medicine in Australia is long, expensive, and not completely thorough. And I think that it's missing so many essence and the beauty and the life of what is a herbalist. You know, I was completely dismayed when I went to start studying my degree 10 years ago and just found myself looking at a dry textbook, writing and trying to get my head around academic referencing, you know, and I'm like, where are the plants? I didn't touch or see a live plant in my whole 3-year degree. And that is such a shame. And I think that if that's what we now call a herbalist, I think that's really, really missing the point. So think it's really important to work out what is your intention with herbalism. And I think unless you're wanting to start up a huge clinic where you're seeing multiple clients and that's your main source of income, then maybe you don't need to, and it's not financially viable to do the entire degree and get that certificate, because you know, maybe it's about finding a mentor and finding different teachers and different books and different courses and just learning from the plants that is enough for you, and that you can still incorporate herbs into your practice. Maybe you're a massage therapist or you do workshops or ceremonies, and then you can incorporate herbs into that practice. I've got someone in the chat. What about liability if you sold something? Great question, Beth. So legally, a herbalist is allowed to sell medicine to their, like if they've done a kind of consultation with someone. So I, for instance, can make medicines and then sell them to people that I work with. Say I have someone come in for a session, for a Zentai Shiatsu session, and then I make them a herbal mix. I'm allowed to sell that to them. But I'm not allowed to just, actually, I do have them on my website, which is illegal, but I do have little medicines and tinctures on my website and I can just sell them to anyone. But technically, I have to have a little conversation and diagnostic chat with that person before I can sell them. If you want to start a big company, like a big business where you're selling tinctures and medicines online, technically, you have to go through a registration form with the Therapeutic Goods Association, the TGA. I know a lot of people that just go under the cover and you can kind of get around it. So I guess legalization is just, yeah, it's a really good question. Does that answer your question, Beth? I hope it does. Yes, Great. Awesome. So in essence, I guess I'm just saying be informed, because I personally, when I started 10 years ago, felt like I needed the piece of paper to call myself a herbalist. And now I'm really feeling the calling to teach and to inform others that I don't think that the degree is necessarily needed, especially because, do you want a $40,000 hex debt, which is now taken into consideration if you're trying to get a home loan or anything as of last year. And it is a considerable debt. And I think that whether you're going to make that back off what you put in, I think it's something to just take in mind. And I'm not saying don't do the degree. I did find that it was really good for me in terms of teaching me how to work within the system. But if you've already got a degree, I think it's interesting to try and find alternative ways of learning that. So that's just to inform you, make sure that you're informed. Once you have done forms of training, there are organizations like the NHAA, National Herbalist and Naturopath Association of Australia, and they kind of you can get insurance or join these bodies if you can demonstrate your training and where you've studied to get some kind of like covering. So there are kind of other options in Australia. So we'll just go one slide back that I skipped. There we go. So the pillars of herbalism. I won't spend too long here because this is actually a huge, huge topic. But something that is kind of like the roots of traditional Western herbal medicine is it's actually very similar and has a lot of similar threads to something like Ayurveda or traditional Chinese medicine. And I think people don't realize that. And they think of Chinese medicine, and Ayurveda talking about the elements and having their five element theory and working with pulse and tongue and treating the individual person's constitution. And they kind of think of herbalists as just being like, or naturopaths kind of just being like, oh, okay, you've got a some digestive stuff. I'll give you some bitters. But actually, when you go back to the Greeks, the ancient Greeks, and humoral medicine, and the eclectics in America, and there's so many different schools, way back in traditional Western herbal medicine that isn't taught in a degree anymore. They were working with their own system, their own complex medicinal system that really treats the individual person and their constitution. And something that underpins that is the elements of fire, earth, water, and air, and the qualities of these elements, which is, I guess, in essence, the energetics. So fire is hot and dry, earth, cold and dry, water, damp and cool. And air, cold and dry. And so these qualities can manifest, the elements, we can see them manifesting within the body. And Laura's just coming back in. So we can see these elements, and when we start to understand patterns in the tissue, so like in the organs and in the skin, when we see a rash coming up on the skin, that might be, and it's hot and dry, that could be a fire imbalance. And so we'd be thinking, ah, okay, I'm thinking to call in some plants with cooling, watery qualities and balancing with opposing forces. And then seeing the person as an individual who has a very unique constitution, and seeing how when you break each person down, they are made up of the elements in differing parts. So some people, two people could be walking down the street, and one person, it's just kind of like a 20-degree day with a light breeze and it's okay in the sun, but cool in the shade. And one person's wearing a jumper and a scarf, and then the other person has just got a singlet on and is like, oh, this is great. The other person's like, well, I'm still feeling a little bit chilly. Like they're two human beings, and it's the same day, and they both ate the same breakfast. But why are they different? Why are they experiencing their external environment differently? And that can come down to, their constitution, how their elemental makeup whether they're more of an air person or with a bit of water, and the other person's predominantly fire, the tiny bit of earth. You know, we're all of the elements, but it's like how we're made up. And starting to recognize these elemental and energetic patterns within people can really deepen and I guess bloom, and can really I guess enlighten and color in the picture for us. And so then we can tailor the formulas and the herbs, and we can really match them so that they're even more targeted and effective than just looking at a symptom being like a sore throat and being like, okay, I'll give you some licorice and some thyme. It's like, why would I give you licorice and thyme? Do you have a propensity to being a thin, more frail person whose throat goes up? Like, each plant has energetics. It can be a combination of hot, dry, damp, or cold, and it will have an affinity to a specific organ. Lots of different plants have affinities to different organs. For instance, hawthorn has an affinity with the heart. And then again, here we have burdock flowers, and you know, they have an affinity with the blood, and they can, it's quite a cooling and lubricating plant, and often the root is used. So this is like, I'm going, this might be just losing a lot of you, and you're like, wow, I'm really not there. I'm just still learning to identify plants, and that's totally fine. You know, it's a very, Chinese medicine, it's a huge, huge topic. It's a huge school of thought. You know, we can dedicate, thanks, Kelly, we can dedicate our entire life to the nuances of this and completely and be blown away again and again and again. And no human will be the same on any day. You know, every human is going to be completely different on differing days and times. And so it's really important to be fine-tuning the lens and to be awakening yourself to seeing the elements. And I think when I really delved into elemental theory, my whole life changed, and I became aware that of my patterns, you know, where I tend to go out. So I always thought I was a really fiery person, and yeah, in my personality I've got a lot of fire, and I think there's different differentiations there. I've got a lot of leadership qualities. I want to make things happen or burn through, and I can be quite piercing in my gaze. They're quite fiery qualities. But in my physical makeup, I'm actually tend to be more cold and dry, and tend to stagnation as well. And that's because I have a lot of water and air in my chart, and I tend to go out really more. I really go out in the air, and that manifests, you know, when air is out of balance. You know, we think of the qualities of air, which is cold and dry, and I, you know, get cold hands and feet, and my hair tends towards dryness, my skin towards dry, cracking joints, things like that, and getting scattered if I don't eat warm, easily digestible cooked meals 3 times a day, you know. And so when I started to observe that within myself, I could really and notice where my tendency to go out of balance was, I could really help myself to come back and to stay grounded. And I think that's also the practice of herbalism, is to be looking to balance the whole and the system, and looking for plants that are symbiotic and that kind of complement us, because each plant has a personality and its own. Some plants are more watery, some plants are fiery, and they will help us to stay in balance, so that we, you know, maybe we don't get sick as much because we know ourselves better, and we know what friends to call on. And in that sense, yeah, these are the pillars of herbalism, and it's a beautiful journey to feel like you understand yourself more and to witness yourself change. So this is, I guess, something that I'm delving more and more deeply into all the time, but I haven't done alone. I'm influenced by the people I see around me all the time, and books have also really inspired me. So some of the resources and books that I guess I'd love to share with you, some of you may have already read a lot of them. I'll just kind of just talk to my personal connection with them. But Isabel Shepherd, really, she's dead now, but she's from Queensland, and I think she really lit a lot up for me many, many years ago when I stumbled across her book. It was kind of like one of the first books I stumbled off when I was a young a young gal just interested in permaculture and doing a lot of farming and woofing around Australia and starting to get a bit more interested in herbs. And I like her perspective because she just shares a lot of plants that grow in Australia. And you know a real herbalist when they have each chapters on a herb and they're just talking about them like they're a best friend. And they're just ranting and raving about each plant. And yeah, it's so easily accessible and readable. I really recommend that book if you're just starting out. And you're learning about identification. I think that's a really beautiful place to go. And then Juliet de Baraclay-Levy, or Juliet of the Herbs, she has a lot of books on animal herbalism, and she works with people as well. And you might have seen her little documentary, but she really inspired my Instagram name, Lily of the Herbs. And she's, again, a really beautiful woman who comes down to the way she speaks about herbs is not from a intellectual kind of top-down way, but it's from a heart-up way. And I think that there's many ways that we can practice as herbalists, but she embodies the heart of herbalism and the way she speaks with love and just has her favorite herb friends and has healed people from so many miraculous, you know, kind of curings of leprosy or gangrenous or things like that just by trusting. And some of her stories are incredible about the way she trusted in a herb in a time of when someone was very ill and had miraculous healing experiences. And I think that's something that's really another way that we can really find herbalism is just when we're in need. Say someone's had a cut or there's an infection and you make just a simple poultice like laying leaves on a wound and continually reapplying them and asking for help and guidance for a plant and seeing a miraculous healing, like something like that. When you experience that, I think you never feel alone again. And that's when I think herbalism has really cemented itself for me, when I've had experiences like that. That was a huge rant. Hygieia, a Woman's Herbal, is a woman from America. It's a little bit hard to find, but it's a wonderful book. And she talks about, I guess, she speaks about using the master plants or plants, the psychedelic plants, in a really beautiful way and how that can be a stepping stone into connecting with the plant realm and using menstruation and sexuality and birthing, all of these kind of like awesome, juicy, juicy topics. And working with the plants throughout that. Yeah, she's onto the magic side of things. So that's something that if you're interested in those kind of realms, or if you're a doula or a midwife or someone who works in that realm, I'd really recommend reading that book. But if you're thinking about getting connected to, if what you're really wanting is to learn about constitution and the elements, evolutionary herbalism up the top, left here, Sage Popham, he's from America and he's a bit of a modern guy, newer to the scene than the others. And he's just really breaks down the elements and the elemental plant and the elemental human in a very easy to understand, maybe somewhat sometimes bland way. That I recommend that book for getting more of an understanding of your own elemental constitution. And then Matthew Wood, he is a very kind of intellectual, also heart-centered, but he's a very smart man who influenced Sage Popham above. He's also from America. There's some great American herbalists. They're just sometimes just a little bit further down the track sometimes. But yeah, he's got so many different books, and this one, Dan, I've got Earthwise, is sort of the old world medicinal plants that have been forgotten about. And he also has other books on traditional Western herbal medicine and diagnosis, tongue, pulse. So if you want to get really nerdy, he's great. And then Making Plant Medicine, Rico Check, that's a great book around how to get, you know, how to start using tinctures and different poultices and salves. And it makes it very simple, very accessible, very readable. And yeah, just demystifies the medicine making process, because medicine making is easy. No one should tell you that making medicine is hard or complicated, because it's very and easy. The magic in medicine, herbal medicine making, comes from the love that is created. It's the quality, you know, the quality of the connection that you had with the plant when you harvested it, the time that you spent when you shook it every day for a month and kept it out of the sun and then lovingly bottled it and created the label and, you know, added honey from your bees. Like, that's where the magic of the medicine, that's what makes a special medicine, not high fangled techniques and special stills. And, you know, like, you can make medicine that way, and I love people that do, but my passion is in making it accessible. So I recommend that book. And then, oh, right at the end, Dorothy Hall, another Australian woman who's passed away, but she's a real pioneer in Australian herbalism and talking about different plant personalities, and she's quite wonderful at that. So, and then, yeah, Robin Rose Benet as well, another American. I think I've talked enough, but that's another great book. So many books out there, and books have been some of my greatest teachers. I've really I've really found friends in them, and I think that we're starting to form a herbal community here in Australia, and that's a wonderful way of learning. But learn from those that have come before us. We, you know, we've so much of it is verbal and shared, but it's wonderful that we have access to books. So see, these are some of the books that have informed me as a herbalist. So now, other options, just finally, is training option to train with me. If you do feel to work further with me, I've got two options. One is a 4-day training, which I offer kind of like twice a year, and I actually have one happening next week, and I think that I've got maybe one spot left. I've kind of kept it available for if anyone did want to come from this session, but it is pretty much full. And that we go through each day, we go through a different element. So we start with air, and then we move to fire, and then earth and water. And each day we have a movement practice to go with that. We make a medicine for it. We talk about a body system with it. And it's just a really interactive way of starting to get familiar with these different concepts. And we do a little bit of tongue diagnosis and moxa. And it's just, I think it's a way of embodying the elements. So I have a lot of fun there. But then if you want to go deeper and you're sort of like in this in-between phase where you're like, do I want to do the full degree? Or maybe, but I'm not sure, but I want to go deep. So I've created, I guess, my life's work is The Way of the Herbalist. And I'm almost finished my first 4-month container with a group there. This beautiful 16 women we have, and each week we have a live discussion, a bit like this, but it's a lot more interactive. You'll probably have your camera on and be chatting a lot more, and we go through, each month is a different element. We talk about body systems within it. We have guest speakers, and talk about real herbal theory and really understanding the elements and energetics and diagnosis, formulation, constitution, everything. And then each week you get a recorded medicine making video. So you'll make 16 medicines over the 4 months, which is like your full herbal toolkit. And then there's a live chat that we go along with. So if you ever having questions about anything that's coming up, you can just pop it in there, and everyone in the chat is kind of like talking with each other, and people are like taking pictures of plants and saying like, I don't know how to identify this, can anyone identify this for me? And so the learning is happening very quickly, and it's like peer orientated learning, so bouncing off and lifting one another up. And you also receive a manual throughout that. So that is what I offer currently, and I love doing it, and the groups and the people that come in, and it is so, so special. So thanks for joining me tonight. I'm just going to stop sharing and leave the space open for any questions that anyone might have. If you want to turn your mic on or your camera and ask me a question, I'm here for you. So it's a time that you're welcome to, pick my brains about anything. And if you're ready for bed and just want to go tuck in or have dinner, that's also fine. I'd love to see that there were some herbalists in there, so people already quite deep in the journey.
Lily. Kelly here. Hello. I am very interested in working with you in regards to, like, as you know, I'm doing Zentai Shiatsu, and the the diagnoses is, I mean, it's a lot to start off with, even if you have like been practicing in that realm for a smidgey bit. And yeah, so I don't know if you're, when this container that you were talking about is coming up really soon, going through those four elements in the body systems. But if you could let me know, because it would really help, because the end of year clinic's coming up really soon, so it would be great to have some help if you've got one more spot left.
Yeah, definitely. So I'll send you the info to that, and I've got a little follow-up email that'll have that in there. And the elements, you know, I'm going through air, fire, water, and earth within that. But hi, Kelly. Good to see
Hey,
you.
Sorry.
So it's slightly differing to, you know, in Zentai Shiatsu, you're working off the Chinese medicine five element theory. So, you know, wood and metal. So it's, there's differentiation between that, but it will be a really great way of sort of like deepening within it. But I guess one thing is I've wanted to try and fit, I've tried to do it so many times, tried to fit four element theory from traditional Western herbal medicine in with Chinese medicine and in with Ayurveda and make it ill into this like beautiful little easy to understand. And but you know that, and there's overlaps, there's definitely overlaps, but because they're coming from different lineages, you know, it doesn't always click in. So yeah, I guess, you know, and that's how we love it. So yeah, I'll send you a bit more information on that, but I just wanted to talk to that. But
Yeah,
it's kind of like
clarify.
They're not, they're not contradictory though. I think that's one thing, you know, you can go deep into one area and then you'll learn about another kind of lens of seeing the elements, and they don't contradict one another, that they complement one another, and we can have different truths within both of them.
Agreed. Thank you, darling.
Great.
I look forward to the email.
Beautiful. Yeah, and unless there's any other people there that wanting to have a chat with me, I'll probably be signing off and sending this recording out to all the others who couldn't make it this evening. So thank you so much for joining me. Look after yourselves in this big time, lots of things going on the internet, and yeah, stay grounded and connect to the plants and the earth, and see you soon. Great.